This is Tabletop Babble, and I'm Amber. Hello! Today on the show, I chatted with the powerhouse behind Beholder to No One and recent member of the Geekspective Network, Nikki. We sat down on September 2nd of this year, 2021, and discussed Nikki's busy schedule with multiple podcasts that she's playing in, running, and editing. I am completely impressed with how she keeps all of her schedules straight, and also that she's only missed a scheduled upload twice in a year's time. You know, I've not been doing it, so kudos to you, Nikki. I am in awe. We also talked about our experiences with audio editing software, and we also offered some tips for building podcast audiences, retaining them, and offering incentives for reviews and support. And now, without further ado, hi, Nikki, and welcome to Tabletop Babble. For my listeners, would you please introduce yourself, tell us your pronouns, and what you do in the space?
Hello, pleasure to be here. As you said, my name's Nikki. I go by she, her pronouns. And I am a podcast extraordinaire, I guess. I don't know. I do a lot of podcasting and a freelance audio editor.
So Nikki has, at this point in time, I'm sure if you've listened to the show sequentially, you've heard an ad of hers already on the Geekspective Network. So she has recently joined Geekspective because, as you said yourself, podcast extraordinaire.
I have a problem.
content. So I am also using this as an opportunity to get to know you, Nikki. And so I would like to know, when did you get started playing RPGs? What was your journey like into this wonderful world of gaming?
I actually started playing in 2003. I was in high school still, and my best friend and I ironically decided to not go to church anymore because of other unrelated reasons. And so we still hung out on Wednesdays, though. So we're like, okay, let's go to the local comic book store, which is where we grew up, Tate's Comics, which is one of the biggest comic book stores in Florida. And they had just opened up a gaming satellite in early 2000s. So we're like, oh, what's this? This looks cool. Let's go check it out. And it was literally smaller than a room, like so tiny. But there was one table and some guys were playing 3.5 D&D. And we're like, what's this? And they invited us to play with them. And I'm like, yes, please. And then I fell in love with it after that. I'm just like, I don't remember what I played. I don't remember anything about it. But I remember I got to act out a character that it wasn't me, and I wasn't depressed as a character, and I loved it, and it was perfect.
I was like, so funny to be like, I no longer go to church. I have replaced my church with Dungeons and Dragons. Oh, how Satanic Panic would have loved to use you as a story of, look what's the doing.
We ironically stopped going to church purely because we were both in an all-girls group, and they were telling us that we couldn't read or listen to or consume the things that we wanted to consume. So like, oh, you like Linkin Park, you can't listen to Linkin Park. Instead, listen to this music that you can buy at the local store. Or like, they kept doing that with every single thing that we liked. It got to the point where I was like, you're just trying to sell us stuff now. Like, this isn't even, this is better for you spiritually. This is just, you can't listen to anything that you actually enjoy. Okay, bye.
Well, Nikki, don't you know that in every Pokemon lives a demon and it's tempting you into Satan's clutches?
Fantastic. We are giving younger kids 900 opportunities instead of 151 that I had.
Yes! Go, Pokemon! Keep making more Pokemon!
Nah. Are shiny demons, are shiny Pokemon better demons, or are they angels in disguise?
I definitely can empathize with you there, because I grew up in a religious household that my mom didn't necessarily outright tell me, like, I can't do things, but she definitely laid on guilt, like, you have to make the right choice for yourself, Amber. What would God think, you know, of what you're choosing for yourself? And I'm like, I mean, I'm getting conflicting messages here. I choose for myself, but also I have to choose for God. It doesn't, whatever. Okay.
Well, thankfully, my parents weren't religious. I actually went with her parents.
Ah.
And I purely went because, like, I was in a very dark time in my mental space, and I was like, okay, well, maybe this will help. And it did. I appreciate that. But then, like, we just decided that this wasn't for us, at least that church specifically, whether a future church was or not, was ultimately undecided. But because of that, we got to play D&D. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I feel like in some aspects, whether you believe in a higher entity or not, like, church is just a place to build community. And so you just basically found a place that aligned with what you enjoy doing and could build a community around it. So you play D&D at this satellite gaming store of a big chain or whatever in Florida. What happened from there? Like, how did you go from that experience into the next? And then ultimately, hey, I'm making lots of podcasts.
So I think it didn't really spiral out of control until I was in my 20s, mid-20s probably. But I played like one game, I think, with my best friend. We might have tried a couple of games, but it was always D&D. We didn't know there were other games. We didn't understand there was these other systems. When I was 18, I played Vampire the Masquerade one time. The people who were there scared the crap out of me because they were super heavy into LARPing and I didn't understand what was going on, so I got really confused and I ended up leaving. I played Mage once in my freshman year of college, which was a lot of fun, but I never played it again after that, so it never really clicked. In 2008, I moved to California, and there is where I kind of fell back in love with D&D, because I kind of played on and off, but not a lot, throughout 2003 to 2008. And in 2008, I didn't have any money anymore. I didn't live with my parents. My family didn't know where I was. I was just living with my online boyfriend at the time, and I was working at like a cheap fast food place. And every Sunday, I met some friends. We would go to Denny's, and we would play D&D for like 8 hours every Sunday night after doing like foam smith building and fighting in the park down the street.
And the Denny's was like totally cool with that?
It was like 8 p.m. when we got there, so they didn't care. Or 6 p.m., so they were, like, not busy. It was, like, a closed-off section in the corner, so we weren't bothering anybody. We had one waiter, and he's just like, as long as you keep ordering food throughout the night, I don't give a shit. But he would also show us, like, here's how you get discounts on certain meals. Oh, you want that? Just order the kids' version and ask for extra fries. Like, it's the same thing. And I'm like, thanks.
Yeah, thanks Denny, and thanks Denny's pro tip, get the best deals out of Denny persons for supporting not only your stomach but also a place for you to play D&D.
Yeah. So I fell back in love with it then. So when I came back to Florida, eventually I wanted to find a group, and I went to a game store, and that's where I started to like just it took off from there. Like, that was probably 23-ish. I'm 33 now, so the last 10 years has been, like, nonstop D&D.
I have to ask you this. What's your favorite character class to play?
If we're specifically talking about D&D, it is a very hard tie between druid, monk, and bard. It depends on my mood for the day.
Okay, so what's the druid mood?
The druid is, like, I love animals, so if I play a druid, actually it doesn't matter what I play, but if I'm a druid specifically, I'm adopting every animal you specifically tell me is in this game. I don't care. I'm adopting them. I will own a pet at some point. My one druid broke into a pet store and saved 3 animals. And you speak with animals, so I made the DM give me their names.
Yes, yes.
I didn't have to come up with them. And Mr. Slithers, my snake, was my new best friend.
I love that. I also love that as a GM when a player character goes, all right, tell me this. I don't want to do it. You do it. That's great.
For bard characters, it's I recently, like in the last 6 or so years, learned how to be face characters. Not necessarily just in D&D, but in like any game. Specifically, it was Mech Warrior and Shadowrun that I was learning them in. And I was taught how to better talk and how to like deal with when I word things a certain way, consequences could happen. And I played with a DM that those consequences actually mattered. It wasn't just like, oh, well, you know what I meant. He's like, well, that's not what you said. So I was forced to be in these circumstances that helped me learn how to become a better talker, which I appreciate. And then Monk is, I just like, I don't like physical violence, but sometimes I have a lot of anger inside of me that I just need to get out. So my character loves physical violence and just wants to punch everything.
The monk is the outlet of your rage expression, yeah.
My monk is basically my 19-year-old just punching shit.
I also have struggled playing the more charismatic, kind of like leaning characters. Because like for me, it was a matter of like, I was kind of shy when I first started playing D&D.
Yep, same.
As you were progressing and learning that character, like, what was your takeaways? Like, what was helping you through that process?
I think it was just the positive experiences that happened, like how I could affect things, how I could make money just talking or convince people to do something just with flirting a little or whatever, depending on the character I was playing. So, for example, and I also played in a safe environment, so I had friends that were all very trusting and understanding and didn't cross any boundaries, which I appreciated, which made it a lot easier to play a flirtatious character when you're playing with all guys, specifically. But, like, I remember playing my first character was, like, in Mech Warrior. She was a consort, and she was based off the Firefly character that I can never remember her name.
Me either.
And I remember convincing a sergeant that I really, really, really liked, like, wink, wink, liked to go on military bases. Like, super duper, really liked it. And I would love it if you took me on a date there. And I rolled really well, and he took me to the thing. I'm like, well, can I have more than one pass just so I can invite some friends over? And I didn't specify who. And of course, I rolled well again, and he gave me a bunch of passes. So I gave free passes to my friends who were my team. And then I distracted him by just like, it's like, oh my God, take me on a tour. This is such a great place. Can I see the airplanes? Oh, this is so cool. And they stole like a million plus credits worth of equipment from the military in this interaction. And then when it finally got to the point of like anything further, I'm like, oh, I have to go to the little girl's room, the one all the way over there. I'll be right back. And I just start walking away. Get me out of here now.
I love that. Yeah, I used to be so afraid to play characters who would have to do like talking interaction because I myself didn't mm-hmm. like doing that. But I definitely feel like the more I did it and the more, like you said, having a good group of people who support it and support your ridiculousness and like,
yeah,
like you're playing a role-playing game, so you don't have to truly, truly be charismatic. Sometimes the dice yeah. help you with that, but...
Like, I found myself accidentally being the talker either way.
Mm.
Because even when I played non-charismatic characters, I would start going up and being like, no, blah, 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 because our, like, bard wasn't talking or something. And I'm like, come on. You gotta say something. Fine, I'll say something. And then my DM's like, roll persuasion. I'm like, can it be deception instead? I'm better at lying. You didn't lie. Well, technically, I said it was yesterday, and it's actually 5 days ago, but okay.
That's great. Okay, so you've been building up your role-playing skills and are really into it. Now, at what point were you like... Aha, content.
So I actually used to be a YouTuber for about a year. I did BookTube, which is just YouTube about books. And I only got like 300 subscribers, I think, at the most. And then I like kind of lost interest in reading in general because I started listening to Critical Role. And I'm like, this is taking over my life now. And I never listened to podcasts before this, so I had some content creation experience, And I was kind of over that fear of being on camera or being recorded because of the YouTube experience. But I didn't have anybody to talk to about D&D anymore. And all of my friends, except for like one, was tired of listening to me talk about D&D to them. Specifically my husband, who sits right next to me in my office and is like, I've heard the story already. And I'm like, I don't care. I need to tell somebody. And he's like, I've heard the story 82 times. And I'm like, but it was good. So now he gets to listen to me tell other people the same stories over and over again. And I was talking to the one friend who's like just as obsessive as I am, but though he says I am more obsessive than him, which is funny. But it's in a different way. He likes the lore aspect. I like to actually play. Because I think I have like 10 games going on, or in my head right this second. And I just was like, well, maybe I could do a podcast. And my friend's like, yeah, do it. And I was like, but I don't know how to word things. Like, how do I podcast? I don't know how to podcast. Who would listen? And the first 5 months were not great. And then I quit. And then I came back 2 months later with a friend, with my best friend's husband, who joined. And then it kind of like from there, I was able to build up the interest and build up the confidence by meeting new people, learning things, learning the trick of the trades, learning how to actually market myself and use Twitter and meet new friends. And from there, all of that jazz.
Yeah, I have two questions for you. So one is, what was the first podcast that you tried to make? And then to follow it with that is, what about that experience was not good, like made you quit?
So the first episode I ever made was called Dungeons and Dragons 101, and that was fine. The episodes that made me quit were, I was tired of doing it by myself and forcing friends to come on. And every single week I'm like, hey, can you come on, please? I need somebody to talk to. I can't just talk to myself. Like, please just come on the show. And it was always talking to the same people over and over again. So finally I'm like, I'm going to ask on Facebook for somebody who's just as obsessed as I am. They can be my co-host. It'll be great. And it worked out for a couple episodes until we got into topics like why I don't like metagaming and min-maxing. And then this co-host had the exact opposite opinions I had. So I'm over here complaining about metagaming and min-maxing. He's like, oh yeah, I do that all the time. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what now? Like, in the middle of the recording. And then he didn't help at all, and he didn't offer anything to the table. And like, after a while, I just didn't want to record with him. Mm-hmm. And it just got really frustrating because I wasn't enjoying it anymore. I wasn't looking forward to recording with somebody. I was just dreading having to talk to this person. Because I knew that I would be carrying the conversation and they would do nothing to add to it. Or no, here's the topic idea, nothing. It was just like, I'm going to rebuttal everything you say. Yes, and I'm like, that's not what I want.
Yeah, it's not very fun. Like, I can understand when having like two different opinions about something, and that could be a fun to hear back and forth if it's done respectfully and not like mm-hmm. in a weird, like, you're wrong, I'm right kind of situation. Like, no, we're two different people with two different opinions and feelings on stuff. Let's talk about why do you like, you know, this, yeah. Or why don't you like this, which I think is fun to do. But that's unfortunate. I'm sorry that was your first experience.
I mean, it's fine. Ultimately, when I came back, I knew my husband wouldn't want to be on it as full-time co-host, and I knew my best friend wouldn't want to because she's very shy. And then I was talking and bitching to them about it one day, and I'm just like, I really want a podcast, but I need somebody to talk to. And my best friend's husband was like, well, I'll do it. I'm like, you will? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, well, you have to behave, like, there's gonna be some rules. And he's like, no, that's fine, I'll be good. And I'm like, okay. And you're gonna help? And he's like, yeah. So that went really well for about like 5 or 6 months, maybe. I think it was 5 months. And then for a while he still edited, even though he wasn't on the show anymore. And then eventually he's decided to stop editing too, which was fine. But that got me enough experience and friends and people that I can literally just go on Twitter and go, hey, who wants to be on my show? And somebody will say yes. So I don't have to, like, beg people anymore to...
Please talk to
come
me.
Come talk to me. Pretty much.
I just want to talk about D&D. Someone talk to me. I never thought about doing an interview show, and I was always surprised when James passed the show on to me, because it's definitely hard. It's definitely a thing as I've been going, I'm getting better at, and it's feeling more natural, and I'm not as anxious anymore. But yeah, definitely finding people to, like, vibe off of that is good is a struggle. So then you came back to podcasting, and so the show that is now Beholder to No One is the show that you've been putting out.
It's been going since December 2019 with that 2 month break, and then July 5th, I think, 2020 is when we came back after the break, and then in September. So the discussion slowly turned to interviews, and then a person reached out, Daniel Niemitz, he reached out to me and said, hey, I have this person who's doing a Kickstarter about a TTRPG called Magic School Mysteries. I think you might like it. If you like it, would you be willing to have them on your show? And I'm like, this is the first time somebody's reached out to me about their content and wanting to be on the show. And I'm like, that's awesome. Let me check it out. And I was looking at it, and at first I was a little concerned because it very much looked like Harry Potter in every form of way. And I asked the person, I'm like, what is your inspiration for this? Like, thinking they were going to say Harry Potter, but they're like, oh, it was some other book that was, like, from the 70s, because it was just magic schools in general, which is the genre that Harry Potter falls into. And this person wanted to basically, they were trans, and they wanted to take it back. She wanted to take it back for herself because of the whole J.K. Rowling situation. And we did an interview, and then she wanted to do a one-shot play of it, and that's how Beholder to One-Shots was born. Was we did a one-shot episode, and I'm like, I want to do this because I want to play all the games. Even though we play D&D, I don't get to play all these other TTRPGs because other people aren't interested to play with me in real life with these games. I want to try everything. How do I make this happen? So I just forced myself to make a show every 2 weeks, so I had to do it.
Oh my gosh, did you start really doing, like, a one shot every 2 weeks recording?
Yeah.
Were you always the GM, or did you have other people GM?
Other people.
Oh.
Well, GM too.
Whew. I was gonna say, if it was just you, that would have been so much.
So, like, let's see, Tanner GM'd the Magic School Mysteries game. Like, I don't remember the order of the games, but a lot of times when it was an indie game, the creator would be the one that DM'd it. Because they would want to use this opportunity to show off the gameplay. And we didn't know how to play this system because it's a whole new system. When it came to, like, Savage Worlds, I had my friend Ellen come on, who runs a Savage World podcast, Birdhouse Mysteries. So she came on and ran the game for that. I've run games on it. They were usually 5th edition. Or I think I ran a Honey Heist game because I didn't know what I wanted to play, and that was the one that came to mind. But usually it's somebody else that DMs, unless it's, like, a special event type of thing. And then I DM for those.
I have Shapeshift, which is my podcast that I started out doing podcasting with. And fortunately for me, I had, shout out to Josh, Evil DM Josh on Twitter, a business partner, friend of many, 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 many years. Decades? Oh no, it's almost close to 2 decades I've known Josh. Holy moly. So anyway,
I feel that.
Thanks to, you know, him and the audio stuff, like, that was definitely helped me out on getting started. So for you, mm-hmm. in this world of podcasting and learning stuff new, what was, like, that learning that you took away from, like, even just audio stuff?
I taught myself how to do editing in Audacity. Just from watching YouTube videos. Eventually, I was getting frustrated with some of the things that Audacity couldn't do, and I learned from mistakes. So I learned how to record separate tracks when I ran into an issue of one person being too quiet, and I had to individually go find them speaking every time and amplify them. And I'm like, never again. Never again. But then later in life, I learned that there's a speech volume leveler, and I'm like, I didn't know that existed a year ago. How dare? That would have been so much easier. And then I eventually switched to Adobe Audition, and I have two friends in a group that we call the Pod Squad, which is just like 15 of us now, I think. It's just a bunch of podcasters, and there's one person per podcast, and we just all help each other out, answer questions, talk to each other. We all became really good friends. And two of them use Adobe Audition for like work-related purposes or for their own podcast. And one of them was like, yeah, I'll walk you through the basic introduction of Adobe Audition. So I was able to learn how to do that relatively quickly. And the more I used it, the more I learned how much faster it was at doing things. And then I would talk to other people who learned tricks of the trade. So like another person taught me about, hey, you can set up macros on a Stream Deck. And I'm like, well, I have a key mouse that's for MMORPGs. It has buttons. So I have macros on my mouse and I can edit completely with my mouse now. Like, I don't need my keyboard at all if I don't want to.
So I know that, like, so for me, I use, because I'm in the walled off garden of Apple. I've bought and I've drank the Kool-Aid, whatever. And I use GarageBand because I absolutely cannot stand the UX, the user interface, the UI mm-hmm. of Audacity. It is, like, if you use it, good for you, person who's listening. I can't. My brain, my sad, unfocused, bad attention brain cannot handle Audacity. So I'm interested in Audition. Is it similar to GarageBand?
I've never used GarageBand, so I'm not sure. I will say it's not free, and that's the one downside to it. It's $21 a month to use, which is a little steep for the most part. But for me, it was worth it because I had used Adobe Premiere before when I did YouTube. So I knew Adobe products. I know how to use Photoshop. So it felt like it would be more similar to what I was accustomed to. So it was a lot easier to learn for me. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to learn a new system, I might as well learn something I will feel more comfortable with. So to me, the $21 was worth it. And half of the things I can do on there, it just makes it so much better.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you're able to do better than Audacity was providing?
So the biggest two, Speech Volume Leveler is one of my favorite tools. It basically increases all the low volumes and decreases all the high volumes to make it so that you are more even without increasing your noise in the background. So like there's a decibel, like you have to play with it, but there's like basically you can make it so where you get rid of your background noise and then you do that, and you also can put a compressor on it at the same time so it doesn't go too high. That's my favorite tool because then it makes it so someone who talks very quietly and then someone who talks very loudly, I can make them all the same level, approximately in the same decibel ballpark. The other big thing I loved was Audacity. When you need music in the background, you have to copy and paste all the way through. In addition, you can right-click and loop it and just drag it to the end and have the song just repeat over and over and over again. And that's all you gotta do. They also have, like, built-in effects, like balanced background music or making it sound like it's far away or making it sound like it's up close and to like the left of you or in a room so it echoes and like it's already built in. So I've used it to make one of the monsters in Clear Light was literally a monster with multiple voices. So I used 10 voices modulation in this thing and I just made it sound like 10 people were talking by clicking one button. Like, that's all I had to do. And I'm like, yes, I love it.
So it has good, like, effect stuff if you want to add more, like, mm-hmm. audio drama to it. That's interesting. Because I've wanted to do stuff like that for my shows, but it's just too much production for me because I have 13 jobs or something like that. Not really. I have one that takes up 90% of my brain, and then the rest is dedicated to getting out of the thing that takes up 90% of my brain.
I get you.
You yourself were also doing all this while working full time.
Yes. I was a full-time employee at a healthcare call center as a data analyst, quote unquote. doing way too much work.
We won't get into it on the podcast, but dear listener, I have heard tales. They are similar tales to the tales that I tell.
Yes.
So we won't.
We have bonded.
We have bonded over work trauma. Tingle, tingle, twinkle, twinkle.
Also, after while I was still working, after a couple of weeks of the TTRPG, we also started the actual play. So we had switched the one shots and the actual play, so every other week we would switch. So it was still only two episodes a week. It was never more than two episodes a week at that time, so it was like, it wouldn't be overwhelming. So I thought.
Well, that's what my question is going to go next is along that lines, where it's like, one, you have a full-time job at that time. You're doing all this stuff with your shows. Like, I know for myself that I would just have a difficult time keeping up. I mean, I am right now with my other shows on Geekspectives Network. And even for Tabletop Babble, sometimes I've been kind of behind on getting the shows out on Monday. So I want to know, like, what was fueling you? Because I want to know.
Honestly, I was really enjoying it. And I just loved having the conversations. There was, like, a couple of weeks where I was burnt out. And, like, I burnt myself out because I took on too much during one week. So I remember the first time I was burnt out again since July was Thanksgiving, because I didn't want to record at all on Thanksgiving, but I still wanted to put out shows. So I did extra recordings the week before, and then I also participated in a charity event, and I also was participating in other recordings. So I had nine different things that happened in one week on top of working, and I was so tired that week. Like, I was just burnt and done, and I did too much. And that was the week that I'm like, I need to have a limit. So what I learned is I will do bi-weekly now. I do not do weekly for most things except for the discussions. Everything else is bi-weekly, and I will do an episode every week, but I will switch what it is. So Vampire the Masquerade and Morning Blues will switch. The Savage Worlds game and Awfully Queer Heroes game will switch. So every other week, I do a different show. I try not to have more than one episode a day. And if I do, it's very rare. And I try to keep it, like, to minimum, like, once every other week that I, like, have to do a discussion on the same day or, like, a one-shot or something.
How are you keeping track of all this?
Google Calendars.
Okay, I was gonna say, it's like, what project management tool are you using?
Google Calendars. I have, like, I'll show you my Google Calendars later. It's ridiculous. Like, I have, this is the day it's being released, this is the day it's being recorded. I have a Google document where I wrote down everybody who was ever interested in possibly being on my show, so I could just not forget, and what topic it was, and when it was recorded, and if it was done already. And I have to keep track of, is it edited, and all that. Because I will forget, honestly. But I'm very proud that I've only missed one. Today will be the second episode I've ever missed in the over a year.
Woo!
And today's was planned. The first one was accidental, because that was when my friend decided to stop editing. And before I replaced the editor, and I didn't realize that hadn't been edited, and I just completely missed it until I went to go put the Thursday episode up. I'm like, why? This doesn't add up. Where's the Monday episode?
Well, I'm in awe of your ability to put out what you've, even when you were doing your full-time job, like, good gravy. Does the thought of leading a group through the creative landscapes of your imagination terrify you? Do you worry about being asked questions you don't know the answers to? Have you wanted to try being a dungeon or game master, but your social anxiety has been holding you back? Hi, I'm Amber, and I used to nearly vomit at the idea of running a tabletop RPG. How'd I get over that anxiety? I haven't. Surprise, I'm still an anxious mess, and you can listen to all of it on Shapeshift, where I've recorded 80% of every game I've ever ran. Over the last 4 years, I've run a ton of indie one-shots like Casketland, a weird Western horror game, to my first ever campaign using Ryutama, a Studio Ghibli-like exploration-focused game. Follow me through my journey learning how to GM and to live with my anxiety. It doesn't go away completely, but it does get easier to manage. Go to geekspective.com to find out more information or find Shapeshift on wherever you listen to your podcasts. So for listeners to understand what's going on with your shows so we can get a better idea, can you break down what... Is it all under Beholder to No One?
Kind of, sort of, not really. So I own all of it, but I have three podcasts officially, two which are not out yet. Beholder to No One has three shows. The discussion episodes, which is every Monday, Beholder to One Shot, and then Behold Clear Light just finished, and now The Morning Blues will be replacing it. That's the actual play, which I'm very excited about. Morning Blues, it is such a fun show. And that goes live before this show goes live, so you'll be able to catch the first episode if you want to go listen to it, and you'll catch it right as it's starting, because I think it starts late September. Then I wanted to play Vampire the Masquerade really, really, really badly, and my friend Alex said they would DM it, but I didn't want a fourth show on Beholder to No One because it's already kind of chaotic over here. So we decided to make a secondary podcast called Dice Before Dawn. And that podcast is purely for darker games. So Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf, Delta Green, Call of Cthulhu, long-term games, anything that could be potentially darker, more traumatic, more warnings, trigger warnings, and stuff like that. We are starting with Vampire the Masquerade, Phoenix by Night, which is based in Phoenix, Arizona. And we have recorded the first episode, and I am so excited to play my Nosferatu, Renee. And eventually that will be released once we officially join Geekspective with that. Until then, it'll be released on Patreon once I have time to actually edit them. And then what started, before that even happened, what started was I wanted to have a sci-fi series. And all I knew is I wanted sci-fi, and I wanted it to be diverse. And that was all I knew. I didn't know what game I wanted to play, and I put a call out for it. And a bajillion years later, it started, and we decided Savage Worlds was the answer. So Sound Control RPG was born with the Savage Worlds game Radio Signal. And that is halfway through being recorded. So once that's done being recorded, I will be DMing Teens in Space, which has a fantastic crew. But the Sound Control RPG will be purely sci-fi related things. I have decided, though, any new projects that go on those two things, as long as those one game is already going, I will not be in. I will be producing potentially, but I will not be in it. I cannot be on any more games.
I was going to say, you have to find that limit, because like producing a show, preparing for a game, making sure you're scheduling everybody and getting it all together just takes so much effort, you know, for content that's, you know, free.
Yeah, exactly. I also am in the process of working on a YouTube thing as well, which has 13 people involved in it total, I think, and... But I'm not the only one running that, so it's me and somebody else who are co-owning that, so it's not just falling on me. They are much better project managers than I will ever be, so they actually know what's going on. I'm just like, I have this cool idea, can we do this?
Oh my gosh.
Five shows later, I'm like, what are we doing?
Because like one of the things that, you know, Nikki and I have talked about kind of briefly on Discord and chatting between ourselves is like trying to figure out like how to get listeners, essentially, like how do you build, how do you do this? And I'm interested, have you, I have an inkling of ideas of what it could be, but I'm interested in knowing if you've been doing any research yourself or have you come to some conclusions on your own.
So the first conclusion I found actually was social media does help tremendously. To give you an example, the first 5 months of my show, I purely posted on Facebook in a Facebook group that I owned. So posting to friends. I think I got about 350 downloads in that total of 5 months, maybe 7 months if I count the May and June, where I was kind of stepped away from it, or 6 months. I don't know. Math is hard. But for the equivalent amount of months after that, I got 10 times the amount of downloads. And the only thing I did different was I was posting on Twitter and I was interacting with people. The biggest thing I've learned is building friendships on Twitter helps you much more than just trying to promote yourself. Because if you just promote yourself, people are eventually going to be like, you're just spamming. You don't care about what I'm posting. And there are people who do that, and I ignore them completely. But when I see that my friend is posting something, somebody who cares about me and I care about them, I'm much more willing to go and try to make the time to listen to their show and promote them and share their stuff and shout them out to the world and say, like, go check out this amazing thing, because I know that they would do the same thing for me as well, and we would care about each other as friends. The other thing is retweet groups. Be in a group of people that are in the same niche as you and shout each other out, because the algorithm wants comments, wants likes, wants retweets. You need more and more of those. And then the third thing is advertisement on other people's shows. It's not a guarantee that somebody will listen to you, but it's a chance that if they like you, then they will go and find you out. Or if you're a guest on somebody's show and they liked the way you played, they might go check out your show. I think for my show, one of the biggest things was because I had so many guests on the show, people will come to listen because somebody they like is on my show, and then they come back after because they continue to like it. Versus if it was just me constantly, they would have no other reason to come over. So, like, if I had you on the show, for example, which I plan on doing one day, then I would think that anybody who likes watching stuff that you're in would then come watch you on the show, and then they might like me in that process and then stay and keep listening.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
Yeah. No. I think those are four takeaways that I've also come to in conclusion with my own trying to figure out my own stuff, right? Like, one, definitely growing my Twitter. I mean, I've talked about this with Josh and stuff too. It's like, you can't just drop a link and go. If you don't interact with people and you're not genuinely interested in their stuff, like, and are a good person online, maybe they're less likely to come check out what you're doing, because it's just like, who is this person? It's like shouting into a room, you know, like you go to a conference hall and somebody's in there, check out my stuff, and I'm like, who the heck was that?
Did somebody yell? I wasn't really paying attention.
Exactly. I think for me, one of the takeaways we learned at Geekspective is we started out because Josh is such an audiophile. He is a nerd about sound stuff. That our audio quality was a huge a benefit to people, especially people who English wasn't their first language. Hearing very good, clear, crisp audio, and that was a huge thing. Game system is a huge attractor, because there are people out there who love, like, their niche game. Like, we had one person who just loved Godbound so much that was like hype about our Godbound game on Tales from Oxfairy. And we've had a couple of weird one shots over the years, like Hunter the Reckoning was one of our like most downloaded show, and it's like this old game from like whatever, but people really liked it. One of the things that I want to experiment with is the thing about me as a listener, and I'm basing this off of like just my own like consumer stuff, is I like consistency of like the same people and like a good vibe together constantly.
Yes.
So like
100%.
Like for me, Spout Lore, which I had Sean O'Hara on early on when I first took over Tabletop Babble, I love that group of players and people, and I could listen to them do literally anything at this point, and it's irrelevant what the system is. I just like those people so much. So I'm trying to, in the future, and I've already thrown this around, I think, maybe to Nikki, maybe not, I'm not sure. Oh, maybe I've said Nikki in my mind, in my house.
Tell Nikki these things.
Where I'm like, I want to do that. I want to make a show where it's like a consistent show, where we have people who gel well together, who have a good vibe together, and make a show that is longer running than just what I've been doing for Shapeshift, which is like one shots and mini campaigns, and see what if that does anything.
Yeah, I think that consistency is definitely key. I think that like switching shows, which is not what I had intended to do, like Clearlight was supposed to be much longer, but life happens. So when we're switching to Morning Blues, I'm having all different people. Like, I'm the only person that's from the original cast, which is perfectly fine. So I know that we're going to lose some people there, but we're also going to gain some people because, not intentionally, but Cowboy Bebop Action Live movie is coming out, and this is based off, inspired by Cowboy Bebop, so that's going to drag some people over. They'd be like, ooh, I like that show. The other thing I did notice, actually, was seasonal things can do better. So October, if you do horror-related things, that is the best time. October was one of my best months up until recently because we posted horror-related content. We posted scary one-shots, and that's also when I think Clearlight started in September, so around that time. And that's also a horror-esque game, so they all started off very well because people were like, I want to consume horror stuff, and they would actively go look for it. But after like October, they're like, now it's time for Christmas. Like, and I'm like, no, it's still Halloween. Yeah. Come back.
Yeah, I'm even trying to experiment with that with even my merchandise stuff that I do with like pins and things. It's like, I'm gonna try next year to be more seasonal based. Mm-hmm. So that way it's like, ah, it's Halloween goblins, or it's, ah, you know, yes, whatever kind of, so that way it's themed as well. Interesting. Yeah, I podcasting is exhausting.
It is, honestly. And I think the hardest part for me is I don't, because of the background that I come from, I am used to seeing where everything's coming from. When I worked at a call center, I had to know, like, I could tell exactly how many people came from what type of advertisement per hospital per program because of the way it was all built. You can't do that with podcasting, so you can't really tell, oh, well, this advertisement worked really well, unless you're only doing one form of advertisement ever and nothing else is ever happening. Like, someone shouts you out on TikTok, you'll never know unless somebody right. points it out to you, and suddenly you have an influx of people and you don't know why. And it doesn't tell you on the podcast, oh, they're coming from this location, they're coming from this Facebook group that you posted on, you should keep doing that, so you don't know what to keep doing. And it's really frustrating because, like, websites and blogs do that. Like, you can tell on a blog where all of these comments and people and posts and likes and views are coming from. Can't do that on a podcast.
That's so strange. Do you think it's even possible to do that? Like, through, because, like, I don't even know. Like, this is a Josh question, because I, End Geekspective, am not that person at all.
I'm sure it is, but it's probably not. Like, people might not think it's worth it for the most part. Like, I personally want to know because I like to know where the data is coming from so I can focus on that versus, like, where everything else is. Like, I don't care where people listen. Sure, most people listen on Google Chrome, Spotify, iTunes, whatever. Great. I don't really care where they're listening. They're going on all the places anyway.
Yeah, I find that fascinating too, because like if you do a Kickstarter, it's like, I can tell you right now that the majority of my traffic comes from Twitter.
Itch.io does it too.
And so that means, yeah, so it's good to know. But if like for one time, we had a really weird spike on a random app episode of Bringing Owls to Athens, a now defunct podcast that Dave and I used to put together. And it was like this one episode had like 800 downloads, and we're like, where did this come from and why? Yeah. Like, nothing else is like that. Like, that is so many hundreds of times bigger than any of the other episodes. So why did that happen?
Yeah, there were days that I had just like a sudden spike and I didn't understand. Like, I'm like, what happened? Like, I didn't post a video today. What's going on?
Right.
And it wasn't like the normal number of episodes that I would have listened to. I eventually did realize sometimes, not all the time, if you have a large spike, some apps will download all of your episodes mm-hmm. when someone subscribes to you. So if you have, like, I have 135 episodes right now, Beholder to No One. So if someone subscribes and I suddenly have 130 something episodes, there's probably one download per episode if I go and look at the analytics for that day. And then there might be like two or three on some other episodes. So my number actually was significantly less than that. But it's saying because they subscribe that every single episode was downloaded, which I don't really like that at all. Like, cool, my numbers are higher, but like they did not listen to 135 plus hours of content in 24.
Yeah. Definitely with the aggregate. I get you. If you have it set up so that your podcast catcher immediately downloads the entire backlog. As a small-time creator, it's definitely an interesting game to play in trying to figure out that magic combination of something that gets people to not only just download, but like you want to retain listeners, right? So how do you even retain? Like, honestly, if you were an original listener from Tabletop Babble when James was on and you're still here with me, thank you. I hope you like it. But the only way I'm going to ever know is like literally if people talk about it.
Yeah, and
like
that's the
and
problem.
Tag me. And getting people to talk about stuff sometimes is, I mean, I'm not being like pointed at you, dear listener, right
just
now.
Generalize.
I'm terrible at it too. It's just general. Like, it's just hard to talk about things, I think.
I had a handful of people that would like message me when they listen to something and they're like, oh, I love this episode and blah blah blah, and that made me really happy because that made me know that somebody was like, I knew somebody was listening, but it made me happy to know like at least a handful of the people who were. And there were a couple that led to discussions, very very long discussions with one of my friends about like especially like the deeper topics, because we've had topics about some not so friendly things that go on in the community, and they led to conversations, and I love those types of conversations. But it's kind of, it's weird because I always become obsessive with something when I binge listen to it. Like, that is when I know that I like something. Like, if I keep wanting to listen and listen and listen and listen, and I will binge all of it until I catch up. And the entire time I have to force myself to remember to post something after every episode so that they know I'm binge listening to it, and then also I'm giving them a shout out because I'm like, oh my god, this is so good, oh my god, episode 3 was blah 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 blah, and it's so cool to do that. And I think it makes there was a couple of times it was friends and they're like, that made my day because I was having a crappy day and then I saw that you were loving episode 5 and you were already on episode 10 by the end of the day, and that made me really happy. And those types of things really help. I think the other thing is like leaving reviews for people. Those mean a lot and help a lot. And when you don't see any reviews for like months, even though you have more listeners suddenly, it's like, wait, who's listening? Do you actually like it? Can you tell me in some form of way? Or if you actually like it, can you go to my Patreon and help me pay for things?
Like website hostings and all sorts of ridiculous, pay myself for editing, because that's a thing too, right? Like
my,
you edit,
my goal right yeah. now is just to make $70 so I can pay help editing, pay my audition and my hosting fees. Like, that's my goal, just help me get to that right now. And then I have a very ridiculous goal of $1,500, which I don't think I'll ever hit, but it's just like, just in cases.
Just in case, you know, it's fine.
In case somebody who's really, really wealthy wants to show how much they love and support the effort and appreciate the effort I put into the show. I'll make a tier for you if you want. Like, I don't know what to offer.
Just a special tier.
Just a special tier just for you. $1,500 tier a month. It's fine.
I was going to say, this is actually a really good place to end on, because I think it's super important that, you know, please, if you're listening to this show and you've listened to Nikki's show, give her a rating, give her a review, tweet at her, because if you've ever appreciated anything somebody has done online, I guarantee you, one, it's not gonna be annoying, and if we're small, especially if we're small content creators, we're gonna love it.
Yes.
It feels validating.
And I will also say, if you don't like somebody, do not leave a review, especially if they're smaller, because you will destroy their rating, which is not very nice.
That is very true, and especially true on Etsy.
Yeah.
Like, don't leave a... If you have a bad experience, please try to work it out with the shop owner first before leaving a bad rating.
I would much rather somebody, like, message me, be like, hey, I have some feedback, would you like it? but like preferably if it was a friend and it was like I specifically asked for criticism.
Yes.
If I didn't ask for criticism, please don't tell me I suck, because now I'm going to think about it every time I record forever.
Just use the rule. If you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all.
But if you have something good to say, leave a 5-star review on iTunes.
For both Tabletop Babble and Beholder to No One. And if you tag me on Twitter and you tell me that you've done it, God, I will send you goblin stickers.
They're adorable.
For me, for Tabletop Babble, and for Nikki. Like, I will send you stickers.
When I share this, I'll be like, free stickers if you do things. Listen till the end.
Free
to find
stickers
out what.
If you leave a review on Tabletop Babble and on Beholder to No One. And then you will get a free sticker from me. Just DM me on Tabletop Babble or Rocket Orca or Nikki. Nikki, where can people DM you? Yeah, there it is.
I have a personal one I never use. Just message me at Beholder to No One. It's now my personal one.
And then I guess you can go to geekspective.com to like find a link to Nikki's stuff.
Yes, you can.
And then Nikki, is there any other place that people can find you? Your YouTube?
If you go to linktree.com/beholder to no one, that's linktr.ee/beholder to no one, you can find all of the links to all of the things, from YouTube to Patreon to Ko-Fi to Dice Before Dawn, all that jazz.
Awesome. Do it. If you're listening, do it.
Please.
I appreciate you. All right. Thank you so much, Nikki, for coming on and chatting with
me.
No
problem.
Hey, hey, hey. It's Amber at the end of the show. I'm not sure if I've done this on a Tabletop Babble episode yet. Maybe I have. Maybe I haven't. I don't know. I've been doing them for Tabletop Crowd because Kristen has been putting out a ton of Tabletop Crowd episodes as I've been going through some stuff in my life. So thank you so, so much, Kristen. And if you want to find Kristen online, you can do so on Twitter at KristenIsNoJedi. Speaking of Tabletop Crowd, those episodes are specifically for people who have games that are currently in a crowdfunding stage or will be crowdfunding soon. If you have a TTRPG or related project that will be crowdfunding in the future, please feel free to send us an email at tabletopbabble@gmail.com. And if the stars align, hopefully we can get you on the show. As Nikki and I discussed in the podcast episode, if you have been enjoying the show, please, 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 please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcatcher you use that allows that sort of thing. We're also on YouTube, so leaving a comment or liking videos or subscribing really, really helps us out. And I want to read your comments. I want to share them and give you special shout outs. And I'm going to do that right now. So we've been putting Nikki's show, Beholder to No One, up on our Geekspective YouTube channel as well. So you can go listen to it there if YouTube is your jam. And this is a thank you to Meg B. Once again, Meg had left a comment on Beholder to No One's role of DM, design theory, and conflict resolution with Bill. And Meg says, as a newcomer to the scene, it's very cool hearing some of the history of TTRPG. So thank you so much, Meg, for leaving your comment. And I want to thank you, dear listener, for sticking around and listening to this if you did. And I will see you in the next episode, where maybe I get to read your comment or review. Until then, bye-bye!